Chuck, you got that muted?
Yeah, man.
I'm really jealous of this corner down here. These signs, New Zealand and Australia, I see down here. Arnold, I want a sign that says Oregonian. After all, I am 3,000 miles from home. I think I'm wrong. All right, you guys, get your seatbelts on. Got your shoulder harnesses tight. All right, we're going to pick it up in Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 19.
I got one that says Italian.
That's close, but not too bad. All right, chapter 1, verse 19. The sin of Kadesh Barnea. All right. We begin with the journey to Kadesh Barnea. We start with the departure in verse 19, and we journey from Horeb, that's Mount Sinai and Horeb mountain range, and then the route. And we went through all the great and terrible wilderness that you saw. So this is about 100 miles of mostly waterless desert. It's hot, it's dry, it's rugged. It's a huge contrast to the promised land. A land flowing with milk and honey. By way of the hill country of the Amorites, as the Lord our God commanded us. And so the arrival, when we came to Kadesh Barnea, this is on the border of the promised land. So here is the route. From the south, we left Mount Sinai, up the Gulf of Aqaba, the Gulf of Eilat, to the base of the Mount Seir mountain range, and then northwest to Kadesh Barnea. And this is just opposite the border of the promised land. Moses recounts that we sent out the spies in verse 20. And I said unto you that you're come to the hill country of the Amorites, which the Lord our God gives unto us. Now the hill country of the Amorites, this term, this phrase is used in two senses. It can be used of what's called the Transjordan. That's the east side of the Jordan River. And like in verse 7. But it can also be used as in a generic sense, like here. It's a generic sense of land in general. And then the verse says, God gave to us, or giveth to us, I should say, or gives to us. God, this is a present participle in the Hebrew. What tells us is that God is in the process of giving you the land right now. The process is underway. So the admonition continues in verse 21. With the basis, behold, the Lord your God has set the land before you. So he's giving it to you right now. He's ready to give it to you. So go up, the command. Go up and take possession as the Lord, the God of your fathers. Again, a reference to the Abrahamic covenant and the patriarchs. The God of your fathers has spoken to you. So going into the land and possessing it is based on the Abrahamic covenant, and it's also based on the divine command. And then the proper attitude of the nation is described. He says, with courage, fear not, be not dismayed. Then the people make a request in verse 22. This initiative came from the people. And ye came near unto me. That word ye is an old English word. It's plural. So this speaks of the people generically. Y'all came to me. Every one of you. Now this is more specifically the leaders, the men who would be appointed. So the people initiated the idea of the 12 spies, and the idea was sanctioned by God in Numbers 13, verses 1 and 2. So this is what they proposed. And they said, let us send men before us for the purpose that they may search the land for us and bring us word again of the way by which we must go up. So these men will go into the land and determine the route of the invasion. These men will go into the land and determine which cities we attack, by way which we must go up, and the cities under which we shall come. So the people initiate the idea of a sortie into the land. And Moses responds in verse 23. He recalls that this thing pleased me. It was in accordance with God's will, Numbers 13. See, this is not a problem of unbelief here. This is not a faith issue. This is simply a military issue, an issue of wisdom, a responsible decision. So the action, I took 12 men of you, one from every tribe. And then the work of the spies is recounted, verse 24, the journey, and they turned and went into the hill country and came to the valley of Eshcol. Eshcol means grape cluster, which of course you'll learn about that in just a moment. And they spied it out. So they checked out the valley of Eshcol. Now we're not sure exactly where the valley of Eshcol is. It's thought to be about 2 miles north of Hebron. So you see on the map Hebron and Bethlehem somewhere in this area. It's thought to be the valley of Eshcol. Then in verse 25, the spies return, and they took the fruit of the land in their hands. This is evidence, of course, of what you've seen, and brought it down to us. So they brought the evidence. They also brought a report and brought up word again. Now, in Numbers 13:23, we learn, and they came unto the valley of Eshcol and cut down from thence a branch of one cluster of grapes, and they bare it upon a staff between two. So here is a route that the spies took. They checked out the land. They went up the main road from Kadesh Barnea to Hebron. North, we'll have to bring the map down here in order to follow their route, past the Sea of Galilee, clear up north to Lebo Hamath. And then they turned around and came back down again, following the exact same route. Past Mount Hermon, on the Hazor, turning on the Sea of Galilee, continuing south, that's Beit Shan, Shechem, Bethel, Jerusalem, Hebron, and finally down to Kadesh Barnea. But you notice this time on the picture they have this huge cluster of grapes with them. Well, that huge cluster of grapes is not an exaggeration.
Wow.
Here is a picture from Israel, a modern grape cluster from Israel. Now that's a huge cluster of grapes, isn't it? So this is not an exaggeration, and this illustration here on the stamp, maybe the grapes are a little too big, but the idea is right there. Huge, huge evidence of a fruitful land. So then the spies brought their report in verse 25. It is a good land which the Lord our God gives unto us. And that grape cluster was proof of that. But the response was a rebellion, starting in verse 26. The response of the people was the rebellion, but ye would not go up, but rebelled against the commandment of the Lord your God. And the rebellion was evidenced through murmuring in verse 27. And ye murmured in your tents and said. So this is private murmuring inside everybody's tent with their family, complaining. And here's the content of their murmuring. Because the Lord hated us and brought us forth out of the land of Egypt to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us. Well, this is exactly the opposite of God's intention. God loved them. He didn't hate us. Then in verse 28, the murmuring continues. Whither are we to go up? Whither is just an old English word that means where. Where in the world are we going to go? Our brethren have made our heart melt, saying, the people are greater and taller than we. The cities are great. They're fortified to heaven. The cities are sky high. So this is a gross exaggeration for emphasis. They're too strong for us. Moreover, we have seen the sons of the Anakim there. So this comment is evoked to further increase their fear and their terror. So God's great act of love in the Exodus is now used as an evidence of hate. So their sin lay in unbelief. This is deliberate, defiant sin. And deliberate, defiant sin corrupts our view of God, not only for them, but for us as well. Be aware of that. So Moses recounts his response in verse 29. Then I said unto you, dread not, neither be afraid of them. In verse 30, the reason why, the Lord our God who goes before you. So God is going to go before them as a vanguard. He's going to clear the way and protect those who are following behind. He goes before you. He will fight for you. He's your strength. He's your shield. And then Moses recalls that he provided evidence for them out of the past, according to all he did for you in Egypt before your eyes and in the wilderness. So from the time they crossed the Red Sea, God had been caring for them. Where you have seen how the Lord your God bore you as a man bears his son in all the way that you went until you came unto this place, the Kadesh Barnea. And so there's the illustration. God was bearing them as a man bears a son. We just sang about that a second ago, didn't we? God is the young man there, Israel is the young son. So Moses reminds them of the protection and care God lavished upon Israel in the past, outside the land. He'll do the same for you inside the land. So he's trying to quench their fear. But the people respond with two responses. First, the response of unbelief in verse 32. Yet in this thing you did not believe the Lord your God. And the second response in verse 33 was rejection of God, who went before you in the way to seek you out a place to pitch your tents. So how did he visibly go before them? In fire by night to show you the way that you should go. And so that is the pillar of cloud, the fiery pillar that guided Israel at night and was seen at night. Looked like a pillar of fire. And then in a cloud by day. And here's the illustration of the Shekinah glory cloud. Again, guiding Israel by day. So visibly, God went before them to show them the way. A miracle, and yet they're still rebelling against him. And so the result is divine judgment in verses 34 through 40. First, the judgment toward the people. In verse 34, God's response, and the Lord heard the voice of your words. They may be in their tents murmuring to their family, but guess who hears? God's ears are everywhere, right? Yep. He knows our thoughts. And the Lord heard the voice of your words and was wroth, was angry. Verse 34, God's decree, and he swore, saying, now, it's not that he uttered a curse word here. This is a new oath. He's swearing an oath here. He's not spitting out angry words. So he swore, saying, you know, they rejected the land God had sworn to them, and so their loud complaining, their murmuring, now causes a new oath, a new swearing. So verse 35, there's a judgment on that generation, the decree. Surely there shall not be one of these men of this evil generation see the good land. So the emphasis here, the evil generation, is the Exodus generation, those that came out of Egypt. They have reached a point of no return. So the Exodus generation will not enter the promised land. See, God is a very patient individual, but he draws a line in the sand. And when we cross it, all that's left is physical judgment. No amount of repentance can change the outcome. They will die outside the land. Now, we read in Numbers 14:20, and the Lord said, I have pardoned according to thy word. And Moses interceded for the people, and God forgave their sin. So this sin didn't affect their salvation, but they had to suffer the physical consequences of unbelief. And the same is true for us. If we sin, that doesn't remove our salvation from us, but we have to bear the consequences. I have a friend. He's a believer. He's in jail for 25 years. Or a minimum of 25 years to life for homicide. He's doing a great ministry in prison, but he's in prison for 25 years to life as a result. Okay? Well, I pray for him to be released, but we'll just see how the Lord moves. Okay, so pay attention to that. Alright, the loss of the land, which I swore to give unto your fathers. This is verse 35, which I swear to give unto your fathers. And again, this is the forefathers, the patriarchs, a reference to the Abrahamic covenant again, which promised the land to the patriarchs. Remember the Abrahamic covenant last session? The land was promised to you, Abraham, and to your descendants. So God still intends to give the land to the patriarchs. He still intends to give the land to Israel, but the Exodus generation has lost out on that privilege. Since they refuse to enter the land, they will be banned from the land. But there are some exceptions to this decree, and three exceptions to this oath. The first one is in verse 36. Say, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he shall see it. He'll survive the 40 years of wilderness wanderings. To him I will give the land that he has trodden upon. So he walked the land when he spied it out personally. So he's the first exception, and to his children. This is the second exception. This is a family inheritance. And the reason? Because he has wholly followed the Lord. See, Caleb was a man of faith. In Numbers 13:30, he declared there was no need to fear the Anakim, these giants in the land. And he received an allotment in the land, which included Hebron, which was the home of the Anakim. And then he drove the Anakim out by himself in Judges chapter 1. Now this, I wish I was a Caleb. Man, great man of faith. Now the second judgment of God is toward Moses in verse 37. The cause, and the Lord was angry with me for your sakes. Now Moses is not guilty of this specific sin, but Moses was caught up in the rebellion of that generation when in anger he smote the rock in Numbers 20 and 27 instead of speaking to it. And so the decree, you shall not go thither, you shall not go into the land. So he too will die outside the land. Physical discipline. He still is a saved man. Verse 38. His replacement, however, comes into view. Joshua, the son of Nun, who stands before him. He's the assistant to Moses. He shall go in thither. So Joshua will be the exception to the oath as well. And the charge, encourage you him. So Moses is to imbue him with a good attitude and with strength. And for the reason, he shall cause Israel to inherit it. Joshua will conquer the land. Joshua will be the one who will apportion the land among the tribes. Now, in regard to Moses here, I think there's a principle that we need to all get into our hearts. And the principle runs like this. With privilege comes responsibility. And with responsibility comes accountability. And with double privilege comes double responsibility. And with double responsibility comes double accountability. So Moses had received double blessings. Israel had received double blessings. And you know, you and I in this room have received double blessings as well. We've received all spiritual blessings. We are accountable to God to live a righteous life and glorify His name. Let's not make the mistake that Moses made. All right, as we get to verses 39 through 40, God's judgment is for the people, and there will be another exception to the oath in verse 39. Moreover, your little ones, this is a reference to the infants, that ye said shall be a prey. See, that was their rationalizing their unbelief. They said, our children are going to become the spoils of war. They're going to beat us, and our children are going to be enslaved by the Anakim. So that's just their excuse. So your little ones, which are the infants, and your children, that this day have no knowledge of good and evil. This phrase, knowledge of good and evil, is basically just a general description of those below the age of 20. So we've got the infants, we've got the young people, and the promise, they shall go up thither. Unto them will I give it. They shall possess it. So the Abrahamic covenant is still in force in spite of the disobedience of the Exodus generation. In verse 40, we have a new command. As for you, he's speaking out of the Exodus generation, turn you. So he asks them, he commands them to turn away from the border of the promised land. Take your journey into the wilderness by the way to the Red Sea, by the Arabah. So here we're at Kadesh Barnea. So we turn from going north into the promised land. We turn east to Mount Seir, the Mount Seir mountain range, down the Arabah. And then we will take a right turn into the wilderness of Paran. That's the route that the Exodus generation basically is going to take. Now, in verses 41 through 45, the second rebellion is recounted by Moses. First of all, in verse 41, the people's response. Then ye answered and said unto me, and they confessed their sin, we have sinned against the Lord. And the commitment, we'll go up and fight on a basis according to all that the Lord our God has commanded us. And so, if the verse continues, Their actions are seen, and ye girded on every man his weapons of war, and you went forward to go into the hill country. So they went north here. But all this is just another act of rebellion. This is an insincere confession, a frivolous confession. It is in disobedience to the command of verse 40 to turn away from the Holy Land. They say, we shall go up. This is very emphatic. We, the Exodus generation, we will go up, not the next generation. Very foolhardy statement. God's response in verse 42, he tries to deal with their heart. First of all, the word of God. And the Lord said unto me, here's the message, say unto them, go not up, neither fight, for I am not among you. That's the reason. The result, lest ye be smitten before your enemies. But the people continue in their rebellion. Verse 43, Moses recounts, so I spoke unto you, what God had told him to say, and the result, ye hearkened not. And they rejected God. You rebelled against the commandment of the Lord. You were presumptuous. That word presumptuous means audacious, rash, arrogant. They had a horrible attitude. Arrogant attitude. Yes, we are. So you were presumptuous and you went up into the hill country, and of course the result was just what God promised. And the Amorites that dwelled in the hill country came out against you, and they were defeated and chased you as bees do and beat you down. And the place was in Seir, even unto Hormah. Well, best we can determine from Scripture, the group left Kadesh Barnea, went into the Promised Land toward Arad, and in the region of Arad, they were stomped on by the Canaanites and had to retreat with their tail between their legs back to Kadesh Barnea. So now we come to verse 45, the result for the people, and you return from defeat and wept before the Lord. So these guys are on an emotional roller coaster. They're in the depths of despair. We can't do anything. Then overconfidence. We'll go in and do it. And now they're in the depths of grief because of the defeat. And that'll happen with us, too, if we're rebellious against the Lord. The second result, but the Lord hearkened not to your voice, nor gave ear unto you. See, they had reached the point of no return. And verse 46 talks about the failure. So ye abode in Kadesh many days. So this phrase emphasizes the failure to enter the Promised Land according unto the days that ye abode there. So this is a summary of the 40 years. So now as we get into chapter 2, we take a look at the journey from Kadesh Barnea to the plain of Moab. Remember, they're at the plain of Moab where this is being written. So we begin with a message concerning Edom. Edom descended from Jacob's twin brother Esau. So this is Israel's most closely related nation. So the journey is mentioned in verse 1. And we turn. Now there's a change there. A change from ye, you, to we. From y'all to us. Moses has re-identified with the people. So we turn and we journey into the wilderness. The direction by way of the Red Sea, that's the Arabah, and the basis as the Lord spoke unto me, and we come past Mount Seir many days. So after a long stay in Kadesh Barnea, they will move out. They will go from Kadesh to Kadesh. At Kadesh, Israel was commanded to turn back into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea, and they refused. And then after their defeat by the Canaanites, we just looked at that, they went into the Negev, into the Promised Land, were defeated in the area around Arad, and they came back to Kadesh. So after their defeat by the Canaanites, Israel dwelt in Kadesh many days. Then the wilderness wanderings was in the Kadesh Barnea area, including the wilderness of Zin. So the area of the wilderness, apparently the area of the wandering is somewhere in this area here. That's kind of a generic area. So in obedience to Deuteronomy 1:40, wandering extended all the way down the Arabah, all the way to the Red Sea, which would be parallel to Mount Seir. So again, the route over to the Mount Seir, the base of the Mount Seir mountain range, down the Mount Seir mountain range, paralleling it, and then into the wilderness of Paran. Now, at the end of 38 years, they returned to Cades Barnea. So we wandered around in this area for a good number of years. And where did we end up? Right back where we started from. So from Cades Barnea, Moses requested a passage through Edom, which were confused in Numbers 20. So Israel travels from Cades to Mount Hor. They start out again. They go to Mount Hor where Aaron dies. And they again travel by way of the Red Sea, going down south of the Red Sea. But this time, they go around the south side of the land of Edom. Now they go to the east and then turn north. Israel turns north, going along the east border of Edom. And they come to the Zered River. They'll cross the Zered River, and they will eventually reach Moab 38 years after they left Kadesh Barnea. So that is your map. And they'll go across the Zered River, and 38 years later, we'll be at the plains of Moab, where this is being written. So we come to verse 2, and we have a divine command. And the Lord spoke unto me, saying, ye have encompassed this mountain long enough. Well, it's time to start out. A second start for the promised land. So the act is, turn ye northward. Now according to verse 8, there at the southern tip right now, you have encompassed this mountain long enough. Turn ye northward. They're now down at the southern tip of Edom. So they're going to turn to the, there's Edom right there. So they're going to turn to the east and go up that eastern border of Edom. Now we come to verse 4. The command. And command you the people, saying. Now this command is in regard to the Edomites. You are to pass through the border of your brethren, the children of Esau. Again, remember, he's the twin brother of Jacob. That dwell in Seir, Mount Seir, mountain range. His descendants are living in the Mount Seir, mountain range. And they will be afraid of you. Therefore, take ye good heed unto yourselves. So they're not to take advantage of the fear of the Edomites. Israel is to treat Edom as a brother. Edom, even if Edom does not act like a brother, and they didn't act like a brother when they refused Israel passage through their land. And then in verse 5, we have a prohibition. And the reason, prohibition, contend not with them. In other words, don't go to war with them. And the reason, I will not give you of their land. No, not so much as the sole of the foot to tread upon. Not even a foot of their land are you going to receive. Why? Because I have given Mount Seir unto Esau for our possession. So Mount Seir belongs to the Edomites. But in verse 6, we come to a command to purchase, first of all, food. You shall purchase food of them for money that you may eat, and water. And water. You shall buy water of them for money that you may drink. In verse 7, we come to the God's divine provision. For the Lord your God has blessed you in all the work of your hand. He has known your walking through the great wilderness these 40 years. The Lord your God has been with you. You have lacked nothing. So the point here is you don't need to go to war with Edom. You don't have to gain spoil from them. I'll take care of your every need. You'll have enough money to buy the food you need. I'll take care of you. And so Israel obeyed in verse 8. So we passed by from our brethren, the children of Esau that dwelt in Seir, from the way of the Arabah, from Eilat, from Etzion Geber. That's moving north along the eastern border of Edom. Then we come to a command in verse 8 concerning Moab. Second part of verse 8. And we turned and we passed by the way of the wilderness of Moab. So again, here we've just come to the Zered River, which is the border of Edom. And so they're going to continue past Moab. Like so. So in verse 9, a divine command comes. And the Lord said unto me, vex not Moab. Remember, this nation came out of Lot, and Lot came out of Abraham. So there is a blood relationship between the two countries. It's not as close as with Edom, but it is a blood relationship. So vex not Moab, neither contend with them in battle. And the reason why? For I will not give you of his land for a possession, because they have given Ar unto the children of Lot for a possession. So they have their territory. Don't touch it. Then we come in verse 10 to an historical parenthesis. You notice in the text we've got a little parenthesis by verse 10 there. This is just a little insertion to explain the background. So we start with verse 10. The Emim dwelt there aforetime. So previously there was a different people living in that land. They're described a people great, many, tall as the Anakim. So the Anakim were a clan of giants. These are also accounted, and this, now we're going to get some other names for the Emim. These are also accounted as Rephaim. The Rephaim were also tall. They are counted as Rephaim and as the Anakim. So they're comparable to the Anakim in their height. But the Moabites call them Emim. So we've got a whole bunch of multiple terms here for the same group. And in Scripture you'll see multiple terms for tall people. Emim, Anakim, Rephaim, Nephilim, Zamzumim. Israel was both fascinated and afraid of tall people. And being a short little Jewish guy myself, I was going to get it. I don't play football. I didn't turn out for football. All right, now we come to verse 12. And Edom. There's an historical explanation that turns now toward Edom. The Horites also dwelt in Seir aforetime. So earlier, the Horites lived in the land. But the children of Esau succeeded them, and they destroyed them from before them and dwelt in their stead. And the point here is, if Esau could defeat them, surely Israel could conquer them. In comparison, as Israel did unto the land of his possession, which the Lord gave unto them. And that's the end of this little historical interlude there. So now we come to verse 13. And the command, now rise up. This is where we're picking up from verse 9. Now rise up and get you over the brook Zered. This is the border between Moab and Edom. And the obedience went, we went over the brook Zered. So you see the Zered River there on the map. To the north is Moab, to the south is Edom. So again, they finally crossed over the brook Zered and they're now bypassing Edom. Then we come to the conclusion of the wilderness wanderings in verse 14. The beginning point. And the days in which we came from Kadesh Barnea to the ending point, until we came over the brook Zered, the time was 38 years. So the conclusive event, the second part of verse 14, is the death of the Exodus generation. Until all the generation of the men of war were consumed in the midst of the camp, as the Lord swore unto them. In verse 15, moreover, the hand of the Lord was against them to destroy them from the midst of the camp until they were consumed. And a reason, one of the reasons for this is the sin of Baal Peor in Numbers 25. And this put an end to the wilderness generation. So now, in verse 16, we come to a command concerning Ammon and the timing. And it came to pass, when the men of war were all consumed and dead from among the people. So as soon as the last member of the Exodus generation passed away, the divine command took place. That command is in verse 17. And the Lord spoke unto me, saying, here's the command itself, thou art this day, you are this day to pass over Ar, which is the city, the border of Moab, the border between Moab and Ammon. Verse 19, the prohibition. And when you come nigh over against the children of Ammon, vex them not, nor contend with them. And again, the reason, for I will not give you the land of the children of Ammon for a possession, because I have given the children of Lot for a possession. So then we come to another little historical parenthetical explanation. Some background here in verses 20 through 23. We'll begin with an explanation of the Rephaim in verse 20. That is also counted as a land of the Rephaim. So the land of the Ammonites was formerly the land of the Rephaim. The Rephaim dwelt there aforetime, earlier. But the Ammonites called them Zamzumim. This was the Ammonite name for the Rephaim. And verse 21, their description, a people great, many, and tall, like the Anakim. But they were displaced, in the second part of verse 21. But the Lord destroyed them before them. So God removed the Rephaim from the land before the arrival of the Ammonites, and they succeeded them. The Ammonites are now in the place of the Rephaim and dwelt in their stead. So as we come to verse 22, there's a comparison with Edom and the Philistines. In verse 22, the comparison. As he did for the children of Esau that dwell in Seir, when he destroyed the Horites from before them, and they succeeded them. So the Edomites are now in place of the Horites, and they dwelt in their stead even to this day. Then our attention is directed in verse 23 to the Philistines, the comparison, and the Avim that dwelt in the villages as far as Gaza. Gaza's on the coast, of course. The villages that dwelt as far as Gaza. The Kaphtorim, this speaks of their origin, that came forth out of Kaphtor, of course Crete, destroyed them. So the Philistines destroyed the Avim, and the result, they dwelt in their stead. So the point, if the Philistines could conquer the Avim, surely Israel can be victorious as well. Well, here's the eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea. This is Crete, or Kaphtor, and this is thought to be one of the origins of the Kaphtorim, the Philistines. And so they came down to the coast, and as you saw in the last session, were attempting to spread out in this area, conquer the area. All right, verse 24. So there's a command now to proceed. Rise ye up, take your journey, pass over the valley of the Arnon. So here we have the Arnon River. That's the next river up north above the Zered. It's the border between Moab and Ammon. There's the Arnon River. And they're going to pass over that border. This would put them in Ammonite territory. Ammon is in this area. And then there's a promise in verse 24. Behold, I have given into your hand Sihon, the Amorite, not Ammonite, but Amorite. I know some of these names sound very much the same, so you've got to be on your toes, like the Assyrians and the Syrians, and we've got the Amorites and the Ammonites, you know. This is the Amorites. Behold, I have given into your hand Sihon, the Amorite, king of Heshbon, and his land. And the action. Begin to possess it. Possess it by right of conquest. Contend with him in battle. There's no prohibition against war with the Amorites. They're not related to Israel at all. And verse 25, we have a promise of divine assistance. This day I will begin to put the dread of you and the fear of you upon the peoples who are under the whole heaven. With the result, who shall hear the report of you because of you shall tremble and be in anguish. Because of thee. So the defeat of Sihon and later Og will demoralize other enemies. So now the conquest of Transjordan is recalled again, starting in verse 26. The defeat of Sihon is the first event. So Israel starts out with a request for passage in verse 26. And I sent messengers, Moses recalls, I sent messengers out of the wilderness of Kedemot unto Sihon, king of Heshbon, with words of peace. So this is a peace offering. This is not an act of war. So Sihon was given the opportunity to avoid war and have peace with Israel. But Sihon's rejection will result in the fulfillment of prophecy in verse 25. He will make a deliberate, responsible decision that results in the fulfillment of prophecy. And so the message in verse 27, the message to Sihon, the request, let me pass through your land. And there's a promise given. I will go along by the highway. This is the king's highway, which is the main route going north. And I will turn neither to the right hand nor to the left. I'll stay right in my two lanes there. And the offer in verse 28, the offer is for food. You shall sell me food for money that I may eat. And there's an offer of water. Get water for money that I may drink. And the request, only let me pass through on my feet. So the selling of the food and water would be to Sihon's advantage. It would enrich him. So it was not Israel's intention to take the territory, only to pass through it. But in verse 29, there's a comparison with Edom and Moab. As the children of Esau that dwell in Seir and the Moabites that dwell in Ar did unto me. So the mention of Edom and Moab is further evidence of a peaceful intention. Israel did not attack either Edom or Moab. They kept their word. They just went beside their land. They did not attack them. But we're not going to attack you. Israel's goal is in verse 29, until I pass over the Jordan into the land which the Lord our God gives us. So Israel's intention was only to pass through. Israel had no designs on Sihon's territory. But Sihon refuses the offer in verse 30. But Sihon, king of Heshbon, would not let us pass by him. And the reason, the Lord our God hardened his spirit and made his heart obstinate. So here God confirms what is already in Sihon's heart. He didn't force him to make that decision, but he knew he would make it. And so he confirmed it. All right, you want to be obstinate? I'll make you obstinate. So the purpose behind God doing that he might deliver him into your hand. And the evidence, as at this day, the day when the account was written, as at this day, Sihon had been conquered in the past. Moses is recounting this past history. Verse 31, we come to a divine command again, and the Lord said unto me, behold, I have begun to deliver up Sihon and his land before you. And so the command, begin to possess that you may inherit his land. Again, by right of conquest. And the battle is joined in verse 32 with Sihon's aggression. Then Sihon came out against us. He personally commanded the army and all his people, that's the soldiers, and the place under battle at Yahaz. And he is defeated in verse 33. And the Lord our God delivered him up before us. And we smote him personally, his sons, his royal family, and all his people, his army. And then the Haram curse is enacted in verse 34. And we took all his cities at that time. So the cities were taken intact. They were not destroyed. They were now deserted. And they would be distributed among the 2.5 tribes in Joshua 13. Now the inhabitants, in regard to the inhabitants, and utterly destroy every inhabited city. So they are totally devoted to destruction. And the curse is described. With the women and the little ones, we left none remaining. But there were spoils of war in verse 35. First spoil of war was livestock. Only the cattle we took for a prey unto ourselves, and the cities with the cities which we had taken. So the Haram curse did not extend out to the livestock or the buildings. Verse 36. The geography of the conquest now. The south is Aroer. From Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of the Arnon, and from the city that is in the valley. That's the south. To the north, even unto Gilead, there was not a city too high for us. Why? Because the Lord our God delivered up all before us. But there was one exception, and that's the Ammonite territory. Only the land of the children of Ammon you came not near. All the side of the river Jabbok, that was the border between Ammon and Gilead, the cities of the hill country, that part of the hill country of the Amorites that belonged to Ammon. And that Israel is prohibited from taking that wheresoever the Lord our God forbade us. So here's a little bit of a summary. In the south we have Moab, and there's the Arnon River. Gilead is located in this area, parallel to the Jordan River. Bashan is way up to the north there. So what happened is we came north. We came to across the Arnon River to Jahaz. And Og came out of Heshbon. We met at Jahaz, and Og was defeated. And then Israel continued north. All right, we come to chapter 3, and Moses recounts the defeat of Og. First of all, the attack in verse 1. Then we turned and went up the way to Bashan, and Og, the king of Bashan, came out against us, he and all his people, unto the battle of Edrei. Now this meant that, of course, Israel went further north beyond Gilead, and conquering this territory would protect Israel from the northeast. So Og, the king of Bashan came out. He personally, Og personally commanded the army and all his people. That's his army unto Edrei, which is about 30 miles east of the Sea of Galilee. And then in verse 2, and the Lord said unto me, fear him not, for I have delivered him into your hand, him personally, all his people, that's his army, and his land. And you shall do unto him as you did unto Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt in Heshbon. So the defeat of Og is in verse 3. So the Lord our God delivered him into your hand, Og also the king of Bashan, and all his people, that's his army. And we smote him until none was left remaining. So again, there's your map. Summary map. We defeated him and then continued north. So when we come to, we'll draw the map up here. There we go. There we're up to Edrei. And Og came out of Ashtaroth down to Edrei and was defeated. And now we're in verse 4. The capture of the cities is recounted. We took all the cities at that time. With no exceptions, there was not a city we did not take from them. 60 cities, three score cities. The area in the region of Argob, that's Bashan, the kingdom of Og of Bashan. Now in verse 5, we come to the nature of the cities. They're walled cities. All these were fortified with high walls, gates, and bars. So they're formidable opponents. They also took unwalled cities. Besides the unwalled towers, a great many. Now, to give you an idea of what these walls were like, if you go to Israel today, you go up to Tel Dan, and you can see the remnants of the wall, the stone walls that were up there. Now, this stone wall is not as high as it was originally, but you can see, there's one of my students giving you a scale, the idea of what these walls were like. And again, they were taller than this. This is just what's left of them. So that's at Tel Dan. You can also get an idea at Hazor. This is our tour guide, Panina. And you can see those walls are pretty formidable, and they're just the remnants of what is left. So this is the kind of cities that Israel was faced with. In verse 6, we come to the Haran curse again, and we utterly destroyed them. They were totally devoted to destruction, as we did under Sihon, king of Heshbon, utterly destroying every inhabited city with the women and the little ones. But in verse 7, again, the spoils of war. But all the cattle and the spoil of the cities we took for a prey unto ourselves. We took a spoil of war unto ourselves. And then the conquered territory is reiterated in verse 8. And we took the land at that time out of the hand of the two king of the Amorites that were beyond the Jordan. And verses 8 and 9, the territories described from the south from the valley of Arnon to the north under Mount Hermon, which Hermon the Sidonians call Sirion and the Amorites call Senir. So here's our map again. To the south we have the Arnon River, and to the north we have Mount Hermon. So all of that is taken by Israel. Israel controls all that area. And then in verse 10, specific places are mentioned. All the cities of the plain, that's the tableland of Moab. All Gilead, that's from the Jabbok River in the south to the Yarmouk River in the north. All Bashan, that's from the Yarmouk River in the south to Mount Hermon in the north. The cities of the kingdom of Og of Bashan, Saleka on the east and Edrei on the west. So to give you an idea here what he's talking about, we have the Arnon River to the south, the Jabbok River to the north with Moab in between, and then from the Jabbok to the Yarmouk with Gilead in between, and from the Yarmouk to Mount Hermon, which is the area of Bashan. So this is the territory that he's describing for us. So in verse 11, we come to another historical parenthetical explanation. For only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the remnant of the Rephaim, and now his bedstead is described. Behold, his bedstead was a bedstead of iron. And the location, we don't know really what this thing was, but we know where it was located. Is it not in Rabbah of the children of Ammon? And the measurements of this bed or whatever it was, after the cubit of a man. A cubit is 18 inches. So it's 9 cubits was the length thereof, 13 and a half feet. 4 cubits was the breadth of it, 6 feet wide. So to give you an idea, the biggest mattress that I know of sold in the United States is the California King. 6 feet by 7 feet. Here is Og's mattress. 16 by 13 and a half feet. He was a big dude, wasn't he? All right. In verses 12 through 22, we come to the possession of the Transjordanian tribes. In verse 12, we come to the allotment to Reuben and Gad. And this land we took possession at that time from Aroer, which is the valley of the Arnon. Half the hill country of Gilead and the cities thereof, I gave unto the Reubenites and the Gadites. Basically, he's talking about this area here on this map, and that the Reubenite territory and the Gadite territory turned out to eventually look like that. So that's the basic territory he's talking about. Then he talks about the allotment to Manasseh in verses 13 through 15. Verse 13. I gave the half tribe of Manasseh, the rest of Gilead, all Bashan, the kingdom of Og, all the region of the Argob, even all Bashan, the same is called the land of the Rephaim. And then an individual is singled out, Yair. He's singled out because of his courage in capturing the region of the Argob. Yair, the son of Manasseh, took all the region of the Argob until the border of the Geshurites and the Maacathites and called them even Bashan, after his own name, Havavot Yair, until this day. And then in verse 15, another individual is emphasized, and to Machir, I gave Gilead unto Machir. He's the grandson of Joseph, and so the clan of Machir received some of this land too. So again, we're talking about basically east of Manasseh, that basic area there, up to Mount Hermon. Then he repeats the information about Reuben and Gad. And unto the Reubenites and unto the Gadites, I gave from Gilead in the north, even to the valley of Arnon, the middle of the valley and the border thereof, even unto the river Jabbok, which is in the border of the children of Ammon, the border between Gilead and Ammon. And verse 17, the Arabah also, that's the east side of the Jordan River itself, and the border thereof, the Jordan being the eastern border, and to the north from Kinneret, that's the Sea of Galilee, to the south even of the Sea of Arabah, the Salt Sea, we know it today as the Dead Sea, under the slopes of Pisgah, eastward. So again, just in general, let's see, I forgot to do verse 17 there, didn't I? Okay, well, I read it to you. All right, basically the area is the area he's talked about before. Just reiterated the same basic idea. Now in verse 18, I think I do you guys will be patient with me. I'll try to get through this section. Verse 18, there's an admonition to the tribes of Reuben and Gad in verse 18. And I commanded you at that time, saying, the Lord your God has given you this land to possess it. You shall pass over armed before your brethren. So these tribes are going to pass over before the other 10 tribes. They're armed, that means they're military force. They are to go in front of the army. They're all men of valor. They're all military men. They're going to go over the Jordan as soldiers. These are the Reubenites and the Gadites. So what's going to happen to their families? Verse 19. But your wives, your little ones, your cattle, and I know you have much cattle, shall abide in your cities, which I have given you. So given by means of conquest of Sihon and Og. Verse 20. The timing until the Lord give you rest unto your brethren, as unto you. And they also possess the land which the Lord your God gives them beyond the Jordan. Then you shall return, every man to his possession from which I have given you. So they'll go over with the rest of the tribes and conquer the land, and then they'll come back to their possession on the east side of the Jordan. This will mean 7 years of separation from their families. 7 years of separation. Then in verse 21, we come to an admonition to Joshua. And I commanded Joshua at that time, saying, your eyes have seen all that the Lord your God has done unto these two kings. So shall the Lord do unto the kingdoms whither you go over. And then he encourages Joshua in verse 22. You shall not fear them, for the Lord your God, it is he that fights for you. So Joshua is going to be the new leader. And so now we come to the appointment of Joshua. In verse 23, we have a request of Moses. There's a prayer by Moses in verse 23. And I besought the Lord at that time, saying, so this is during the conquest of Transjordan. The conquest of Transjordan apparently gave Moses hope that he would still be allowed to lead the conquest of the land. And so the basis of the plea is in verse 24. O Lord God, you have begun to show your servant your greatness and your strong hand. Then he praises God, for what God is there in heaven or on earth that can do according to your works, according to your mighty acts? And of course, that's a rhetorical question. Obviously, there are no other gods that can do that. And now comes the plea in verse 25. Let me go over, I pray you. He's begging. This is heartfelt. To see the good land that's beyond the Jordan, that goodly mountain, that's the hill country, and Lebanon, that's the extreme north. God answers in verse 26. God can answer prayer, yes, no, or wait. And he gives an answer here. Verse 26, but the Lord was wroth with me for your sake. He was angry with me for your sake. He's furious with me. And he does it for your sake. He does it to teach a lesson concerning leadership. Leaders bear greater responsibility than the rank and file. Moses had double blessing. He had double accountability. And so he experiences double punishment. And the result, and he hearkened not unto me. So in other words, God said no. And the Lord said unto me, let it suffice you. Let the conquest of Transjordan be sufficient. You know, my grace is sufficient, Moses. And then he said something to Moses, I hope God never says to me, speak no more to me of this matter. Cut it off. But then God gives a positive answer. He never uses an example of God's grace in verse 27. A command to Moses, get you up on the top of Pisgah. Pisgah is a mountain range. This is where he will die when we get to chapter 34. He'll die on Mount Nebo, which is a peak in the Pisgah mountain range. Get up there and lift your eyes westward and northward and southward and eastward. Behold with your eyes. So he'll see the promised land. For you shall not go over this Jordan. So this is my understanding of the boundaries of the promised land. And he's at Pisgah or Mount Nebo. So he looks eastward. He looks northward. We'll see this when we get to chapter 34. He's eastward. He looked westward, then northward, then eastward, and then southward. He still sees all the promised land. And then he's commanded to appoint Joshua. But charge Joshua, encourage him, strengthen him, for he shall go over before the people. He shall cause them to inherit the land that you shall see. Verse 29. And so we abode in the valley over against Beth Peor. And this is the valley is where Moses will be buried. Now Beth Peor is the place of Balaam's blessing in Numbers 23 and 24. It's also the place of Israel's apostasy in Numbers 25. It's the place where the daughters of Moab enticed Israel to worship their gods. And then the Levites rose up and executed the worshipers of the Moabite idols. So here is a proximate position. You can see the Dead Sea just on the left. Beth Peor is located about there. Mount Nebo is located there. And right between the two is the valley. That's where Moses will be buried. And so, I buried session number 2. I've kept you over 5 minutes. I will not give it back to you. No, Arnold, is there any announcements or anything that needs to be said? No, or if you're free, you're free to go. Thanks. Thanks for being here.